Outdoors coming on the airwaves, coming your way.
Hey now, we're outside indoors, beat on a book on a snowy day.
Hey now, we're inside outdoors, baiting a hook and anchors away.
Baiting a hook and anchors away.
Baiting a hook and anchors away.
Inside Outdoors is brought to you from the beautiful rolling hills, forests, and lakes of southern Indiana. Produced in Bloomington and brought to you live every Saturday morning at 7 a.m. right here on your local community radio station, WFHB. Inside Outdoors features hosts Don Jordan, Buddy Bill Moser, and Rich Reardon, and gives you everything you need to know about the outdoors surrounding our local community, our state, and around our nation. With fishing, hunting, local and national outdoor news, the environment, natural resources, safety, issues in our community, and just down-home family fun. Our goal is to inspire how to be a good steward of our precious natural resources. You can call into our show at 812-323-1200 and ask a question or tell us what's on your mind. So sit right back, get a cup of coffee, journey with us into the lakes and woods, and find out what our natural resources have to offer. If you miss the show, you can listen online at WFHB.org. Just go to the public affairs listing, and you'll find a podcast of our show at Inside Outdoors. Hey, and with that, we're live on the air.
Hey, good morning, everybody. This is Inside Outdoors, and I'm Don Jordan. And
I'm Rich Reardon.
Here with Rich Reardon this morning. Buddy Bill, his horse wouldn't make it in this morning.
No.
And we're sitting here in the kind of gloomy Saturday morning.
A little bit out there.
A little foggy in the low spots.
Fortunately, not as cold as could be.
Yes, well, as you'll reveal in your weather forecast, we've got some a little more harsh weather coming in tomorrow, and they were talking freezing rain this morning on the TV.
Well, right now, I'll do the weather report since you mentioned it.
Good idea.
39 degrees right now downtown Bloomington, and foggy in the low-lying areas. It seemed to be a little better. If you were higher, you were, but anyway... Basically, Sunday's the chance when we're going to start looking at some snow and a little bit of a cold front coming through. We're going to be down into the 20s by next Wednesday.
Well, that's time to go to Florida.
That could be it. But we're hoping to have as little snow as possible. But there is possibility of snow. So who knows? I don't think it's going to be much. Anyway... that's about all I have for waiting.
Well, that's enough. That's good enough. We're a little short on outdoor news this morning since deer hunting season over. We still have rabbit and quail season open now and will be until January.
Yeah.
And into January for rabbits. And last night I was... with a group of people where there were numerous fishermen who tell me they've been catching big bluegill at Lake Griffey.
Really?
Yeah. Well, they're used, you know, before the last renovation, they call it, when they drained it for the second time in modern history, there were big ones in there before, big bluegill and red ear, and apparently there are now. But, you know, when you get a lot of bluegill fishermen down there, which there are local, that take out a cooler full of bluegill a day. Those big bluegills don't last that long.
Right.
So if you want to enjoy those, you probably should get down there and give it a try whenever it's possible.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been possible of late. You know, there's been people out fishing, mostly crappie fishermen, been out on Monroe.
Mm-hmm.
But fishing's not all that great.
Yeah. Yeah, this time of year it starts getting a little hard.
We do have some unusual news. You know, a former executive of Monsanto has been confirmed as the director of the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service.
Of course.
That her name is Aurelia Skipworth, and she's been around to quite a few different federal jobs in the past 10-15 years, but she is a Monsanto corporate person. That's the reason why she was nominated. And the first thing she's going to do is try to delist the grizzly bears from being an endangered species again. Mm-hmm. Of course, that gets, you know, they do this every few years, it seems like. They want that grizzly bear delisted so bad. And then it goes to the courts, and the judges always nullify that.
Well, they're working on the judges, too. So
They're working on them. I see that recently there's been 146 federal judges appointed by the current administration.
Yep.
All of whom.
And they just got rid of the Bar Association's ability to, I don't know whether it was to stymie a judge's appointment because of various, ethical reasons or whatever, but I think they've gotten rid of that as well.
Well, I'd heard something about that, yes.
Well, also I heard they came up with an amendment to the Constitution in the early 1800s that had to do with lawyers not being in Congress or the, Senate, and that it was just sort of disappeared, like when they started printing the Constitution around the Civil War, it changed, and that was where they stuck the Emancipation Proclamation, I believe.
Oh, well, they had a little extra paragraph in there, I guess.
Well, now all we've got is lawyers,
Yeah. Well,
because they're not supposed to belong to any foreign, organization.
Oh, yeah.
If you're in the Senate, and the Bar Association is the British, something royal, I forget what it exactly is. But it's a British thing, I didn't really know that what the bar called or what.
Now there is a bar that I'm more familiar with.
Yeah,
you find it down here on Kirkwood.
Right.
I don't want to mention any one of them in particular. But you can't get any legal help there. Well, I don't want to say that. You know, after law school gets out, there might be a few stray wannabe lawyers come wandering in there.
Right.
And,
Well, hey, we're going to get a phone call here in a little bit from a guest that I've asked to come on the show. He lives kind of far from here, so he doesn't get into Bloomington all the time, but I thought it was pretty interesting. His name is Jason Flickner of the Lower Ohio River Waterkeeper. He is the, I guess, the director.
The waterkeeper.
He's the waterkeeper down there.
Right.
He lives in New Albany.
Right. I looked him up when you passed along his name that
yeah.
he was going to be on. You say he's not driving here. He's going to
call in. Yeah. So if you hear us talking with somebody on the phone, don't give a call. Just listen to the end because I can't answer a second phone call, and it'll just beep.
So. Oh, yeah, that's right. Well, you might get a chance to call in after
he's done.
He's done talking.
He should be calling in a little bit here, and that's kind of exciting for me because I'm interested in, I don't know, we've talked about the Ohio River somewhat, but it'd be interesting to have someone that really has some knowledge about how it's faring right now. I'm sure it's
not
necessarily all that good.
Well, it's, we get some of the biggest toxic loads in America are dumped into the Ohio River on our ground.
Yeah.
And, of course, upstream isn't any better. Ohio, Pennsylvania, none of those are great citizens when it comes to the environment.
West Virginia,
there's a good one.
there's a good one, yeah.
That's absolutely right.
Well, and we're not putting you down, West Virginia folks. We're putting down those coal companies and coal barons like old, what's his name?
Begins with an M.
Yeah, anyway, there's
Monkey?
A lot of them, including the governor and everything. So anyway, have you ever been to Rabbit Hash, Kentucky?
Well, I thought it was Rabbit Hatch.
Hash,
S-A-S-H. I've heard of it, but I have never been there. I don't even have any idea where it is.
If you leave out of Cincinnati, you go across the river through Covington and then up by the airport there.
Uh-huh.
And then there's some back roads that kind of go over the hill and towards the south, and you end up coming down to the, or I guess they're kind of bluffs, but they're all forested, and then you get down into this river road. It's where it comes out of the mountains and turns into a river road right next to the Ohio, And right there is Rabbit Hash. It's a town. They have a black lab, last I heard, as the mayor.
Ah.
And I think there's four people that live there or something like that. But it's an incorporated town. And it's kind of interesting. Yeah. It's sort of like a destination for people that have, that go for motorcycle rides or whatever. And they used to have I guess they've rebuilt it, but they had a general store there that was really old. I mean, like, from the 1800s. It was quite interesting to walk around in, you know, just by the building structure, but it burned down, I believe. And this was 10 years ago or something. I haven't been there in a long time. But I think they've rebuilt it. It was sort of a place to go and get a Coke or whatever. And but that's right on the Ohio, and you can sit there and watch the stuff float by, and it's not necessarily all that good.
Well, there's a lot of commercial traffic on there, big barges, whatnot.
Yeah.
The Ohio, that's a Rabbit Hash is an incorporated town.
Yeah, I believe so. Yeah.
Well, if Rabbit you got Hash, an incorporated Kentucky. Town, even if it's only got four people, you cannot discharge a firearm in the city limit. So,
right.
Those poor people can't shoot anybody. Only four of them, my goodness.
Well, I don't know. We'll have to ask the
dog
about that.
They could be easily overrun by a group, a band of wayward somethings.
Yeah, you never know.
Rabbit Hash. Well, yeah. There's Sun. You know where Rising Sun, Indiana is? That's a tiny little town down around Switzerland County.
I've heard of it, but I've never been there.
I've known a couple people from down there. It's a country down there.
Mm-hmm.
It's very country still.
Well, that one place you were talking about, is it Hickory?
Oh, Hemlock Cliffs.
Hemlock Cliffs.
Uh-huh.
That I was looking that up, and boy, that's like kind of out. That's out in the middle of nowhere.
It is, and thank goodness there's still some places that are out in the middle of the nowhere.
Yeah, I don't want to tell anybody where that is.
Well, not very many people go there, so it is a little off the beaten path. But it's certainly worth seeing.
Yeah, totally.
I would go there again someday. And have I mentioned on this show the unusual phenomenon that my wife and I observed driving down 37 a couple weeks ago?
No.
Well, beginning in Orleans, Indiana, and going down to all the way through to Paoli, all of the houses that line the road have brand new metal roofs. Many of them have been redone on the outside with new siding, new paint, different colors. Just an incredible amount of updating has been done on these little towns south of us here. And we even saw another town up in northern Indiana where it looked like the same salesman had been through there. And I just wonder if there's been a federal block grant for rural communities or something to upgrade these older houses. We're talking, those big old two-story houses that you always used to wonder who lived there, they're back to their former glory.
Mm-hmm.
If you haven't noticed that, or if you don't drive down through there very often, you gotta take a little gander.
I'm gonna look
that.
For that, yeah.
It's a pretty amazing, really.
Wow, that's pretty impressive.
Yeah, and instead of putting up new apartment buildings to get rid of the older buildings like we did here in Bloomington, they've fixed up the old buildings.
Right.
Which is refreshing.
Yeah.
And, anyway, I just thought I'd mention that again if I hadn't mentioned it already.
No, that's cool.
If anybody knows anything about that, what's going on with that, I'd like to hear from you. And wonder what old Bill's doing this morning.
Well, he said he's got a bunch of stuff going on at the old bait barn.
That's right. He had three or four things going
on. Yeah, I mean, they're going on until next week.
The toy collection, Salvation Army toy collection.
Keep talking. I got him calling in. Hold on a second.
Okay, well, that's what Bill's got going on. That's down on Moffett Lane, the former bait barn. About everybody who's around here knows where that is. You just go down Fairfax, turn left on Moffett Lane, and you'll see it on your left before too long down the road there. And Bill does this every year, and his heart's in the right place. And the Salvation Army, no matter what you think of their religious position, does tremendous work to help poor people and people who are down and out. And well, they're one of the few that really does put their money where their mouth is, and they're dedicated people, and they've helped people I know, and probably help people you know too. So when you see that bell ringer around, drop a buck in the bucket.
Yeah.
You know, if you can give more, give them more. So they put it in a good place. They don't waste their money. I've never heard of a scandal involving the Salvation Army, although on this morning on the news out of Indianapolis, they had apparently left one of their buckets in front of a store. They must do that so they don't have to man them all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody stole the bucket, tripod and all.
Oh, man. That's pretty low.
All I can say is I hope those people needed that money badly.
Man.
As they've taken it out of the mouths of others who definitely need it.
Yeah.
Another good one of those kind of causes, which, you know, again, you gotta, no matter what you think about the religious aspect of it, the Wheeler Mission in downtown Indianapolis has always been there for down and out people. And when I worked at the Indianapolis Times, now that's going back, I was just a kid, and I had to walk by these guys every day sitting out on the street. And that was where they had to go to eat, and if they wanted a place to get out of the cold, that's where they went for that too. And
yeah.
So the Wheeler Mission is a good outfit too. I've never heard of any graft associated with them either. So,
right.
So there's two you can put on your Christmas list. We just signed up with the Environmental Defense Fund.
Mm-hmm.
That's EDF, which is one of those groups that provides lawyers to try to stop all of the raids on our natural resources and our fish and wildlife and quality of water and air that have been going on. So they're pretty much constantly in court and need money to keep that ship going.
Yeah.
So there's another one for you if you're looking for a Christmas gift. Give your corporate uncle a membership in the Environmental Defense Fund.
Right, that's a good idea. Yeah. Hey, listen, we got to get out of here for a break, and I do have our guest on the line, and so we'll talk to him as soon as we come back. And there you go. His name is Jason Flickner, and he's the Lowell, Ohio River Waterkeeper. So
I'm excited to be talking to Jason Flickner.
Be right back.
You're listening to Inside Outdoors, brought to you from the beautiful rolling hills of southern Indiana. So hang in there, and we'll be right back with more Inside Outdoors after this short break.
This is WFHB, Bloomington, Indiana. Volunteer-powered community radio at 91.3 FM for South Central Indiana, also 98.1 in Bloomington, 100.7 in Brown County, 106.3 in Ellettsville, and online at WFHB.org. And as I said just a little bit ago, it is fairly cool, but not freezing. It is right now 39 degrees in downtown Bloomington, a little bit foggy, as you might expect this time of year. And we're going to be getting into some rain tomorrow and Monday, chance of snow Monday night. And but I don't think it's going to be a lot, but it's certainly going to get colder. It's going to be a high of 32 and then 28 on Wednesday, although we're looking at sunny skies. We have Jason Flickner on the line. I'm going to get right back to it and put you on the air live. Don, are you ready? Okay. Hey, Jason, thanks for calling in.
Oh, not a problem.
I really appreciate it. And why don't you explain, this is Don Jordan, by the way. I want to introduce you guys, even though it's on the phone.
Hi there, Jason. I'm Don.
Hey, Don. How are you doing?
Good. How are you?
Doing okay.
Yeah, we got him up earlier. He's
talking about the Environmental Defense Fund and lawyers.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm going to propose that the environment, the current environment of movement, adopt Warren Devon's "Send Lawyers, Guns, and Money" as our official song for the environmental movement these days. So I think, I don't know if that's what he was thinking about when he wrote the song, but that certainly reflects our needs very well. So yeah. So how are y'all doing this morning?
Doing good.
We're sleepy.
Yeah.
Yeah, although I usually get up at this time, I'm usually not out and about at 6 a.m. But, you know, you got to make some sacrifices when you're trying to save the world.
Right. I bought one of these silly Ring doorbells, and I'm trying to get this thing set up, and I kept setting it off myself every time dogs would move around or something. That thing was going off all night long. So.
Oh, my. Well, I'm sure you'll get the bugs worked out of that.
Well, yeah.
Jason, tell us what you do, and so we can kind of get introduced to the listening audience here.
Well, yeah. So, I mean, if some folks out there probably know who I am. I've been working in environmental advocacy in Indiana and Kentucky, statewide. Well, pretty much statewide, for about 20 years. Started out canvassing, going door to door with Hoosier Environmental Council. Ended up working policy for them on I-69. So I was the main advocate in Bloomington for Hoosier Environmental Council to stop I-69. Ended up going on from there, working for the Indiana Forest Alliance, and that's when we kept a couple girls up in a tree for 9 months and stopped them from logging out in Yellowwood. And went then from there to work at U of L, and then got picked up by the Kentucky Waterways Alliance, and I was the policy director in Kentucky, working on stopping mountaintop removal, dumping of coal mining fill in the streams and valleys. But we also had a grant to work on the Ohio River, and that's when we started working on the Ohio, basically monitoring ORSANCA, which is the Ohio River Valley Water Sanitation Commission. This is an organization that was created. They're great. I mean, they were created in 1948. So, and the reason they were created was because the Ohio River was so polluted that it was interfering with interstate commerce. I mean, there was, you know, literally they were getting to the Ohio was getting to the point where it was, you know, you couldn't even move barges up and down it anymore to move products.
Right.
So anyway, ORSANCA was created, and the first thing they did for, you know, 30, 40 years was get communities to invest in wastewater treatment plants. You know, and so that's why we've seen such great improvements in the Ohio River since what people remember in the 1960s. And they actually established pollution control standards for the Ohio River. Some of the first environmental standards in the entire country were on the Ohio River from ORSANCA. And so, I've been working with them, you know, I say working with them, but opposing some of the stuff that they proposed for about, I guess 15 years now. It's been multiple things that's come up. ORSANCA itself has changed. It used to be a lot of more wastewater engineers, chemists, environmental managers from the state, and now the lawyers and lobbyists got a hold of it. And of course, they represent coal and oil and gas, and so that's why we're seeing all these bad proposals come along. I mean, the Ohio River, I mean, it's just cleaner than it's, you know, ever been, but it's still the dirtiest river in the United States.
Yeah.
What does that tell you? You know, I mean, and that when I say that the dirtiest river in the United States, that's based on EPA data. That's toxic release inventory calculations that are basically giving us that number. And it goes back and forth with the Mississippi. And honestly, it can be blamed, you know, significantly on one plant down in Rockport that's releasing about 60% of the nitrates into the river. We can kind of curb their permit. We could knock the Ohio River down from being the most polluted river in the country. And that's kind of why I started this organization. You know, you mentioned is more than focusing on just that one permit, but, you know, more about how we're using the Ohio River as our, the way I call it is our, you know, our front door to the world in Louisville and southern Indiana. Because that's what we relate to here. We're river cities down here.
Yeah.
Well, that's kind of sobering. I, you know, being a fisherman, I've noticed in the past, actually, maybe 15, 20 years, they've been catching nicer fish, walleyes and whatnot, out of the Ohio, pretty good sized ones. But you dare not eat them unless you're a brave person. And
No.
They're full of lots of different toxic chemicals. A regular
stew.
Yeah,
I think you can eat one meal a month, or I forget.
It's something like
that.
So
I was actually on a panel with the League of Women Voters this week, and we were talking about that. And that's one of the things I want to focus on is mercury. Mercury discharges into the Ohio.
Yeah.
The way that it's bioaccumulating up the food chain. We've got a serious problem down here with that. And I can go into it. It can get fairly complicated rather quickly. But, you have mercury that's being discharged from coal-fired power plants, steel plants, industry. It's all coming down. Obviously, it's accumulating in the lower Ohio River, and it's accumulating in the upper trophic level fish. So your big striped bass and catfish, stuff like that. So anyway, you have a lot of people eating this fish that don't even know it. There's commercial fishing industry on the Ohio River most people don't really know about.
Yes, how can they get away with that? I mean, don't the various states check the level of mercury in these fish? Or I guess they just let that go by, huh?
There's kind of some loopholes. I mean, it's the problems, at least in Kentucky. Now, I'm not real sure how it's being handled in Indiana, to be honest. But in Kentucky, the problem's being passed around. So Division of Water is testing the fish tissue and saying, yeah, there's too much mercury, telling Natural Resources, to put out a warning, and then telling the health department that it's their problem to fix. So, the problem is just being passed around. I'm trying to focus on with this is we've got, in Louisville, we've got a lot of low-income and immigrant communities. I used to work for it was a company that owned a lot of the Section 8 apartment housing in Louisville, and I was a painter. All I did was go around, painting hallways and whatever. Most of these apartment complexes, every day about noon, you'd have these guys pull in with their pickup truck full of fish, and they had just come from the Ohio River. And these people come out of their apartments, buy these fish off them for $2-3, and that's how they were feeding their family. It's what I call protein replacement, because they can't go into the store and buy. They can't afford to go into the store and buy beef. So that's this is how they're feeding their family. And these people, they do not know the levels of mercury in these fish, and it's a severe problem. And nobody wants to address it, because if we have to do a cleanup plan for mercury, you're going to start shutting down a lot of plants.
Absolutely. But that's the only solution, since they won't take any other steps. Of course, under the current political climate, at least in Indiana, nothing like that's ever going to happen.
Right. Well, and you've got this, when it's in the water, they say, well, it's being deposited from the air. And they act like that's you get out jail free card. And it's like, no, actually, you need to address it in the air too, to keep it out of the water. If it's in the air, if it's on the ground, if it's in the land, if it's in the watershed, it's in the water.
Yes.
Mercury is a massive problem. The Ohio's got all time. There's a great movie that's just come out. I don't know if you've heard about this, Dirty Waters.
No, I haven't.
Mark Ruffalo. This is all about DuPont and the creation of Teflon back in the 50s, 60s, 70s.
Mm-hmm.
And Teflon, and it's this PFOA. I won't even go into the chemical name. I'll embarrass myself. But, it's this PFOA is highly toxic, causes all kinds of cancer. And it's now found in every human being around the world, because of DuPont dumping it up in West Virginia. And all that came downstream to Louisville.
Right.
I've met the attorney who works on that case, who this movie is about. But, yeah, it's called Dirty Waters. I've been speaking to some groups around Louisville who are planning to go see it. Mark Ruffalo, and it's all about how DuPont hid their illegal dumping of PFOA and PFAS chemicals into the watersheds of the Ohio River. Great.
Well, I know that Teflon business is pretty scary. I learned several years ago the hard way that if you cook with Teflon-coated housewares in your kitchen and you have a bird anywhere nearby in your house, that the fumes from that kill birds.
Uh-huh.
Outright. Just
yeah, there's all kinds of stuff. Yeah, this is why my organization is broke, is because of everything I talk about is so despairing. Nobody wants to hear it. So.
Yeah, it's bad news. It really is. It's, like you say, people don't want to talk to you about it.
Well, but, you know, part of the reason I really wanted you on the show was to also to tell you that we appreciate the effort, because it is something that's a hard job to do, too, but it's something that needs to be done. It'd be great if people would put the effort into doing that. What can a general person do if they want to help support you and your cause?
Give me money.
Yeah.
Literally give me money. I mean, because what it's, you know, I mean, first of all, I don't believe in individual responsibility for environmental degradation.
No.
At least as long as there are industrial polluting at the levels they are.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not saying we can't do stuff. There's common sense for sure. But, you know, but the primary thing we need to do is have able. So what my organization primarily is doing is the on-the-ground organization identifying when there is a problem with a permit or a regulation so we can ring the bell and bring the lawyers in.
Right.
And that's what we need to do. That's the only way we're going to stop this administration of the EPA is by continuing to sue them. And here, now here is the good news, is that since Trump took over the EPA and started opening up some of these regulations, some of these regulations have actually gotten stricter, because they went in front of judges, and the judges say that they were never implemented properly to begin with. So some of these regulations that have been opened up, I'm not saying that, you know, it's improving overall, but it's pretty funny. Every once in a while, you will see these stories, and, you know, the regulation has gotten stronger, and it only because the Trump administration wanted to weaken it. And the judges said, no, it was never implemented properly to begin with. But no, money is the best way to help. It's what we need desperately. I think most every environmental organization around here would say the same thing. We'd love to have volunteers. We'd love to have you come out. I can tell you to, you know, do certain things, rain barrels, rain gardens, and all that kind of stuff. But money flowing towards litigation is what we need right now.
Well, it's been that way for quite some time, I think. It's always been a legal arena problem for us, because there's no way else to correct it. At least that's what.
Yeah, and I was a conservation director for the Indiana Forest Alliance for a long, long time, and I, you know, I loved that work. I loved, you know, and I think we were making great strides, but we had no legal basis to work upon, because timber is agriculture. So back into the Clean Water Act, now we have, you know, the Clean Water Act, a very citizen-oriented, structured law that we can work with, that I'm working with. And so, and it's just, you know, it makes perfect sense. I'll tell you one thing that's very, very important about my organization is that, so the Hoosier Environmental Council, which I'm a executive committee member of, but, you know, Hoosier Environmental Council or Hoosier Chapter of the Sierra Club, you know, their work has to stop at the Ohio River. The Kentucky Waterways Alliance, their work stops at the Ohio River. My work doesn't. I work both sides of the river. I work from the Kentucky River to the Wabash River. If it flows into the Ohio River between the Kentucky River and the Wabash River, that's my water.
Well, you got a choice job there. Lots of things to work on.
For sure.
Hello.
Yeah. So, what are you working on now? The hardest. You know, can you just give an idea what you're going through every day with fighting these things?
Yeah, the rear brakes on my 2003 4Runner.
Mm-hmm.
No, I'm teasing. I guess right now we just came off of a major battle, and I've actually kind of backed off on the policy a little bit. So this group Orsenico that was created in 48 created these standards for the Ohio River. The first thing they did after Trump was elected was propose to deregulate 48 pages of red lines going through the regulations. I put it up on the net and called it a bloodbath because that's what it was. It was a bloodbath of deregulation. 48 pages of just red lines going through all the criteria, all the numbers, all the chemical standard, you know, everything.
Right.
All the designated uses, everything. It's all gone. And so we spend all of 2018, and I'm part of my organization, the Ohio River Waterkeeper, or specifically the Lower Ohio River Waterkeeper, is part of Orsenico, the Ohio River Valley Sanitation Commission, one of their subcommittees called the Watershed Organizations Advisory Committee.
Mm-hmm.
This is essentially the environmental groups that are advising Orsenico, you know, just as much as the energy groups get to advise Orsenico. So, but anyway, we fought this deregulation, and we were involved with organizations like National Wildlife Federation has representatives on this group. So, but, you know, we generated 6,000 comments to this small little, you know, Orsenico group. Before we started paying attention to them about 12 years ago, these guys would never, you know, when they wanted to change regulation, they'd get 2-3, you know, it was a big deal if they got 7 comments. Now they're getting 6,000 comment letters coming to them.
Oh, that's
good. You know, from the public telling them what to do, what not to do. You know, so, but it's really, you know, but we, and so we stopped them. We stopped them, backed them off the cliff from this concept or from the idea of complete deregulation. It would have been the largest deregulation in the country because it's a multi-state. It would have affected, you know, every main stem state in the country or in the Ohio River Basin.
Wow.
So we stopped deregulation, and they kind of, you know, Orsenico, they did a little bit of a, sorry, I'm letting my dog, they did a, you know, a much more weaker revision of the standards, but we stopped the big, you know, push of deregulation. And that's a huge victory. And it's just, it's one of those victories that comes in little bitty spurts here and there. And so you never, there's never a point to celebrate, and there's never a point to point out, hey, we did this, and we need money to keep doing it. Does that make sense?
Makes sense. I just want, before we forget about it, it'd be nice if you'd give folks, our listeners, a telephone number or an address to get in contact with you if they want to help you out.
Yeah, probably the best place to go right now, which is my website, which I'm not very happy with the way it looks, but we are a broke organization. But so it's OhioRiverWaterkeeper.org.
OhioRiverWaterkeeper.org.
Yeah. Ohio River Waterkeeper.
Yes.
So, .org. And so my email is jason@OhioRiverWaterkeeper.org. The web address, again, is OhioRiverWaterkeeper.org.
Right.
And that's probably the best way. Go find us on Facebook or Twitter. We're doing a little bit on Instagram, but, you know, we really do need involvement because when I say we, I mean me. It literally is me, my dogs, and a couple other people, you know, that are doing this. I've been very surprised at the lack of engagement over the course of, you know, I figured there wouldn't be much engagement for the first year, but we're now 3 years into this. And, you know, we're out there in the forefront of fighting, you know, deregulation and, you know, being out on these news articles and everything else, and still there's just very little engagement. I hear every day, you know, oh, it's so important, the work that you're doing, but then they never give money. You know, they never show up. I never hear from them again.
Well, Jason, this has been back in the 70s. I was a newspaper reporter and came up against Westinghouse and their PCBs. And even though, you know, you could show it in the water and in the fish and everything, you really don't get any action until there's the possibility of dead bodies. And
right.
You pretty much have to drag a corpse out and say, this person was killed by this stuff to prove it or to get any movement. And I don't believe that's changed in all these years. You still have to have dead bodies. And, boy, it's really hard to put the onus on any particular one chemical or toxic that has caused somebody's death, unless it's, you know, outright eat the fish and you die, you know. So
right.
What's the answer to that? How do you get people worked up to do something?
Well, I guess one of the things I would like to do, first of all, with as a water keeper, I'm required to have a vessel, a boat that can be out on the Ohio River. Currently, that's a tandem kayak, which is not
a Ohio River boat.
River most of the time. So I'm working on getting that, and that's the point of that is to be able to interact with that boating and fishing communities, but also to be able to get grab samples and monitor and just be a presence on the river itself. So, but what I would like to do, if we could get the money, is to start doing some health studies with some of these. I let's just call them Section 8 populations, you know, that are reliant are eating fish regularly out of the Ohio River, and see if we see a spike in mercury in these children and in these women of childbearing age.
Well, you know, they did that in on fish from Lake Michigan. Up in Michigan, they tested families who ate a lot of Lake Michigan salmon. And, you know, the what they found primarily was that this stuff affected the behavior of the children who ate it. You want to know where you're getting all of these behavioral problems in children in elementary school? Well, the toxic load that they have in their bodies is probably the good place to look.
Yeah, unfortunately, we're all being treated as test tubes.
Yeah, pretty much.
Well, and for the last 10 years or so, I've been involved with the anti-coal movement, at least stopping mountaintop removal in West Virginia. And I know Mary Lynn Evans. Are you familiar with Coal Country, the movie, and stuff like that that's been put out too? She's the one that did the Appalachians.
Yeah, I've seen Coal Country, the movie, and I've been highly involved with that. Tours through the new Corps of Engineers, General or whatever, Admiral, when he was posted in Louisville. Mm-hmm. I've been very involved with Kentuckians for the Commonwealth, but primarily as the policy director for the Kentucky Waterways Alliance. That was the main thing that I was doing. We were fighting, and we're going to get into a policy issue, but it's a requirement of the Clean Water Act called anti-degradation, which is a great environmentalist word. We were suing the EPA for approving Kentucky's anti-degradation implementation policies or implementation rules. And so the main thing I was doing was commenting on all these mountainside and mountaintop removal permits for failure to include an adequate anti-degradation review. Yeah, so I'm very, very, very knowledgeable of coal and coal mining.
Well, you know, one of the reasons I brought that up was just to point out the corruption. If you remember in that movie, Judy Bonds, who was one of the people that they interviewed throughout the movie, she had a black water behind her house, you know, coming from the slurry ponds and everything. And she died of massive cancer everywhere. And, you know, I know a lot of people in the area that complain all the time. Their kids are sick. Their people are, you know, dying, getting cancer. It's a higher rate. And yet there's really still not a whole lot of stuff being done, at least in West Virginia. And they allow these things to continue to happen. So, you know, if you can't get it stopped, it really is the money versus, or the big greed profits, you know, that are running things still. So it's a tough road to travel.
Yeah, especially on the Ohio River, we've got all kinds of stuff. There's all this oil and gas build out that's going on up in West Virginia and Ohio.
Sure.
It's, you know, and that's basically
you drive by that big plant on the way into Charleston.
The cracker plant.
Yeah.
Yeah, when I first heard about that, I was like, "What are you so upset about?" In a cracker plant, I think it was saltines.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, you know, and I've had to educate myself, and now one of the goals of my organization is going to be educating the people of Louisville and Southern Indiana about what's happening up in West Virginia and Ohio. What is coming at us? I think we need to all be aware of what we're sending down to other people,
right,
what we're sending downstream, and what's coming at us from upstream.
Yeah.
And you know, there are mechanisms within the Clean Water Act to affect permit regulations and by doing that. So, and again, that's what's so critical about my organization. I can have members in both Kentucky and Indiana, and what it allows me to do, honestly, and I'm going to say this very, very softly, but it allows me to kind of pit the states against each other, if you understand what I'm saying. So, you know,
yes, I understand.
You know, Indiana's got a better rule on irons. You know, Kentucky, why aren't you doing that? You know, those types of things. And so, the plastics is a huge problem, and all this build out of fracking and natural gas. I mean, you guys probably heard about the barges all wrecked down here in front of Louisville.
Yes.
There's been proposed to send both natural gas and fracking and waste down the Ohio River on barges. Can you imagine if those barges were filled with anything? It was bad enough if it was filled with raw coal. Can you imagine if it was filled with coal combustion waste?
I thought the president just changed a rule that would allow the fracking waters to be dumped directly into the streams. Didn't I see that somewhere?
He probably did. Fracking is not something I've had to really work with, fortunately, but, you know, all of my colleagues up in West Virginia and Ohio, Pennsylvania, you know, they are all on top of that.
Well, just about every place seems to be a candidate for fracking, the way they're buying up mineral rights everywhere.
Oh, yeah. But, yeah, it's moving, it's encroaching, and it's, you know, whether it's fracking itself or just the build out of the industry to support fracking.
Uh-huh.
Or the processing of the chemical, the gas after it's captured, you know, that's what's actually happening. And it's happening in the Ohio River Valley again. You know, we already took on, just like much of the Great Lakes, the steel, the coal and the steel industries. You know, we took that burden for the nation of providing coal and steel. You know, and I think that, you know, we paid for it environmentally. We've paid for it in our health. We've paid for it in our, this area has been polluted heavily for decades and decades. And now they're trying to do it to us again with fracking and plastics. You know, this is not happening in, San Francisco. You understand what I'm saying?
Yes. Well,
this is the central red state, you know, Midwest. This is the steel belt. And I'm just tired of it. I'm tired of this pollution being dumped on us.
Well, I'm
tired of living next to the most polluted river in the United States of America.
That's the worst part. And, you know, we have that reputation. That is us. You know, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service calls Indiana the Mississippi of the Midwest for good reason.
Right. Yeah.
For good reason. Of course, we have the new Monsanto U.S. Fish and Wildlife Director now, so they may not refer to it as that anymore.
Well, I worked when I was with the Kentucky Waterways Alliance, too, you know, and this is something that folks got to think about as well, is, you know, we were working, I was primarily funded by a grant out of the McKnight Foundation, which is up in Minneapolis, and we were working on the hypoxic zone in the Gulf of Mexico. You know, Kentucky's got about 20 miles of Mississippi River frontage, but that was enough to get us, you know, $100,000 a year grants to work on nutrient issues. And these nutrients, you know, and they don't, you know, people don't think of the nitrogen and phosphorus as being a problem, but they're a massive problem.
Yes.
And they're just going to become more and more of a problem. Here down here in Louisville, I don't know if you heard this, but Louisville's been hosting the Ironman competition for the last 5 years. And this year they had to cancel the swimming portion because of how harmful algal bloom in the Ohio River. They couldn't let people in the Ohio River.
Yeah.
And all that money had to be refunded. Now Ironman may be leaving Louisville. And, of course, this all gives me a base for litigation.
Well, we have the blue-green algae issue in our reservoirs here in Indiana. And undoubtedly in streams, they just hasn't made the news. But
sure, it all runs off from all the places, you know, they have it.
Having lived in Florida for many years, they have the red tide, and that's directly connected to fertilizers. nutrients.
Yeah, oh, for sure.
These days, and nobody has the backbone to stop it because the agricultural lobby is so very powerful every place, really, but especially a state like Florida, Indiana.
Florida is where the fight is really at right now, just because it was such a big issue in the gubernatorial election. I guess it was 2018?
Yes.
The last election, there was basically red tides occurring everywhere around Florida due to nutrients and releasing nutrients from Lake Okeechobee, I believe.
Yes.
And, yeah.
Comes right down the Caloosahatchee River out into Pine Island Sound and the Gulf of Mexico.
Yeah. And Florida's been the test strip for nitrogen and phosphorus criteria, putting a criteria on this. And it's not gone well on a regulatory level for the EPA. Now you've got all these people that are complaining about the nutrients and what it's doing. And it's just becoming a huge mess. Here's the other aspect of it, too, because I don't want people to think the problem's just down in Florida and the Gulf of Mexico. But down here in Louisville, Madison, Evansville, we're investing hundreds of millions of dollars into greenways and waterfront parks and pedestrian bridges over the water. It's all great. I love all of it. I'm out there all the time, but we're doing it next to the most polluted river in the country.
Right.
We're doing it next to the river that delivers more nutrients or up there in the amount of nutrients that it delivers to the Gulf of Mexico. These harmful algal blooms, what they eventually cause is a fish kill.
Yeah.
And so what I've been telling, I'm in a small little town here across from Louisville, New Albany. And so our downtown is booming because of the greenway, because of, that they put this greenway in. We've had, 40, 50, 60 new restaurants. We got restaurants that, fusion restaurants that I could never imagine being in a small little Indiana town. And I keep telling these shop owners, could you imagine 2 months of dead fish smell for covering the downtown area because of algae and a harmful algal bloom that killed the fish off? And what that would do to the economies down here. And they all tell me it would shut them down. If they even went a month or even 3 weeks, they said they could survive above. The one woman who owns a very successful restaurant in New Albany said she could survive for about 2 weeks, but if it went any longer than that. And these fish kills, they take a long time to clean up. I don't know if you've ever been to Baltimore Harbor, but it smells.
Oh, yeah. They're real nice out on Fort Myers Beach.
Oh, I'm sure, yeah.
Fort Myers Beach, wow.
We got a lot to lose if we don't do something about it.
Well, there's one thing we can't get along without, and that's water. We're a water-required species, and we have to have not only water, we have to have a lot of water just to keep our bodies going. So,
and it has to be clean.
It doesn't matter. It doesn't make any sense that we're poisoning all of it. It makes no sense. How can you make any sense out of that?
Yeah, especially when you're, we're now learning about how polluted the oceans are. I think through the 50s, 60s, 70s, there was always this concept that the oceans were so big they could never be fully polluted. And now we're hearing about all these plastic, islands.
Right.
Concept that the oceans are actually polluted and depleted is entering our psyche.
That sounds like we got some exit music.
We have exit music coming on. Hey, I want to really tell you how much I appreciate you giving a call and getting up early and talking to us about all this. We'd love to have you on again, and I'd like you to meet Buddy Bill down the road. So maybe in 2020 we'll try to have you back on again if you wouldn't mind.
Yeah, sure. And I've moved in and out of Bloomington, I think, a dozen times, so I get up there all the time. I love living there.
Well, you got my email. Again, we're about ready to get out of here in 20 seconds, so I just want to thank you again, and I'll be in touch by email.
Yeah, good luck, Jason.
Okay, thank you. And again, it's OhioRiverWaterKeeper.org. Please help us out with funding.
OhioRiverWaterKeeper.org.
Yes, thank you so much. And that's it for us. We'll see you next week.
Bye.
Well, that's all we have time for today. Inside Outdoors comes to you from the beautiful rolling hills and green forests of southern Indiana. Thanks for listening. Inside Outdoors is brought to you each week on Saturday mornings at 7 a.m. right here on your local community radio station, WFHB. If you happen to miss the show, you can listen online at wfhb.org. Just go to the public affairs listing and you'll find a podcast of our show.